हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु विश्वावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. Śrīla Śukadeva Goswami summarizes the instructions he gave so far in this chapter. In verses 11 to 12. First, in verse 11, he points out that, quote, even the worshippers of the demigods attain the highest perfection of benediction. Spontaneous attraction, unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If they associate with the Bhagavata, a devotee fixed in the exclusive service of the Lord. 11. In other words, the demigods are not to be disrespected, but they should be worshipped, not be worshipped separately. In his purport to verse 11, Srila Prabhupada writes, apart from the gross materialists who care very little either for God or for the demigods, the Vedas recommend worship of different demigods for different benefits, and so the demigods are neither false nor imaginary. So they don't care actually for anybody, they just want their benefits. So in this way, at least they'll turn to authority. That's the whole thing. You're trying to get them to accept authority, to approach. So you have that personal aspect. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what you're trying to do. Because you're just getting that principle working. Then the natural thing is the demigods get their power from the Lord, then you turn to the Lord. Then it's a matter of, since you're dealing with the Lord, and what you'll get from the Lord in the way of material benefits will be temporary, and the soul can't be satisfied by them, the soul being eternal, God being eternal. So what's the actual benefit you could get from God? Right? So that makes sense. This is the natural steps.
It's like feeding a child. Treating it or something.
Yeah. Because otherwise, which is interesting, someone on the platform, Anamoy, you think would be more enthusiastic about feeding, but...
Yeah.
Srila Jiva Goswami explains in Bhakti Sandarbha, one should not disrespect other deities, but rather one should honor them because of their relationship with the Supreme Lord. That has some meaning.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Worship of the demigods as if they were independent of the Supreme Lord is eloquently and vehemently rejected in these words. Free from all material conceptions of existence, and never wonderstruck by anything, the Lord is always jubilant and fully satisfied by His own spiritual perfection. He has no material designations and therefore is steady and unattached. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only shelter of everyone. Anyone desiring to be protected by others is certainly a great fool who desires to cross the sea by holding the tail of a dog. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9.2.
I'm not sure I get that one.
Means, let's say you wanted to get from, you know, London to New York.
Yes.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So, would you be inclined to, buy a ticket on wet dog, you know, waterways, that the process is you just sit in the water and hold on to the tail of this dog.
the dog swims.
And the dog swims, and then he's going to get you across the ocean.
It has to be a very sweet deal. I'm not attracted.
Yes, so that's the point. It means that it's not possible.
No.
This cross the ocean.
Yes.
By holding onto the tail of a dog.
France maybe, but New York.
I mean, the channel maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. It might take a while. Okay. World's record for crossing the channel holding the tail of a dog. Yeah. You know. Yeah.
It seems an important point here is the dog itself can't make it across. What to speak about taking someone with them?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Right. We've never heard of a dog swimming across.
No.
Like that. Okay. So the Lord, he's never wonderstruck by anything. There's nothing in the material world that he finds special. Right? There's no arrangement he finds special. Right? Even within the spiritual energy. Mm-hmm. What he finds special is the affection of the devotees. Right? But here, we're not getting into that aspect of the Lord. We're only dealing with his dealing with the living entity in the material world. So there's nothing here that can be wonderstruck. The jivas are wonderstruck. That's why they get distracted. Mm-hmm. Right? Then the Lord is always jubilant and fully satisfied in his own spiritual perfection. So there's nothing that happens from the material energy that makes him happy. Right? It's not that you've made some arrangement here and that made him happy. No, it's just he's happy because of his own spiritual perfection, his own internal potency. Right, so it's only through bhakti that he's happy. He has no material designations, and therefore he is steady and unattached. Right, we are unsteady and attached because of material designations. There's no material designation. Let's not worry. Because of the designation, we're attached. Okay, and he's the only shelter of anyone. So therefore, trying to take shelter of anybody else is foolish. Just like taking shelter of the dog, who himself can't cross the ocean, then you try to hitch a ride with him, it only gets worse. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms, after the worshippers of various devatas have their desires fulfilled, what do they achieve? Nothing. Simple.
Yeah. It's pretty, end of the discussion.
Srila Prabhupada elaborates.
Okay.
All plans for material enjoyment, either by worship of different demigods, as described in the previous verses of this chapter, or by modernized advancement of scientific knowledge without the help of God or demigod, are illusory only. For despite all such plans for happiness, the conditioned living being, within the compass of material creation, can never solve the problems of life, namely birth, death, old age, and disease. It means those don't go away. You get rid of one disease, another one comes out. You know, there's always something new. You get rid of, typhoid and polio, and you get, AIDS and Ebola, right? You know, so, it was better when it was worse, right? You know. Yeah. The history of the universe is full of such plan makers, and many kings and emperors come and go, leaving a plan making story only. But the prime problems of life remain unsolved despite all endeavors by such plan makers. Actually, human life is meant for making a solution to the problems of life. One can never solve such problems by satisfying the different demigods, by different modes of worship, or by so-called scientific advancement and knowledge without the help of God or the demigods. Therefore, unless the gross materialist or the worshippers of the temporary demigods come in contact with the transcendentalists like the pure devotee of the Lord, their attempts are simply a waste of energy. Only by the grace of the divine personalities, the pure devotees of the Lord, can one achieve pure devotion, which is the highest perfection of human life. Only a pure devotee of the Lord could show one the right way of progressive life. Otherwise, both the materialistic way of life without any information of God or the demigods and the life engaged in the worship of the demigods in pursuit of temporary material enjoyments are different phases of phantasmagoria. Right? So one's more developed. It's coming closer to the actual position. If one worships the demigods according to the recommended Shastric directions. So that's better than the one who doesn't. But both of them are phantasmagoria, because it's just, you project that you'll be happy, right? That's what what's the short of this? What's the phantasmagoria is a whole bunch of what? Phantasmas?
Fantasies,
but
phantasms.
Right? Is that you see something, you project upon it what you think it is and how that will make you happy. But it doesn't. That's why it's phantasm. It's not real. It's just what you consider, this will make me happy. Yes. Mm-hmm. In bhakti, so phantasmagoria is like a cornucopia or something? It's just like a whole array of phantasms? So
something like that.
Yeah.
A kaleidoscope of phantasms.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a whole, complete unit of like dream. It's
okay.
Not real, but it's a complete in itself.
Okay, so it's just this all aspects of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
In Bhakti Sandarbha, Anucheda 174, Srila Jiva Goswami explains how devotees with desires, sakamis, are elevated beyond the above mentioned different phases of phantasmagoria to the topmost platform of bhakti dharma. His explanation culminates with the citation of Bhagavatam 2.3.11. After describing the way one is qualified to engage in the three types of yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga, the Supreme Lord next explains how they who are sakama devotees can make progress in devotional service. The Lord says, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.20.10-11, "My dear Uddhava, a person who is situated in his prescribed duty, properly worshipping by Vedic sacrifices, but not desiring the fruitive result of such worship, will not go to the heavenly planets. Similarly, by not performing forbidden activities, he will not go to hell." Good to know.
Yes.
"By performing akama karma, he becomes renounced and used to following shastra and avoidance of sin. Thus he becomes qualified to progress further." Okay, so in other words, he's performing his prescribed duties properly without a desire for the results. In other words, he's practicing this nishkam. Right? He's sakam. That's why he's engaged in the activity. But he's practicing the element of nishkam.
Yes.
So if one does that, and so because of that, he's not doing what he shouldn't be doing, so he's not going to go backwards.
Yes.
And because he's doing it without desire for the results, he won't go to the heavenly planets. Right? Because that's the other danger. One is, one doesn't falls out of the human form of life. The other is that one ends up in the heavenly planets. So either of these are going to be a disturbance. Right? So, yes.
Akama karma and nishkama karma is just synonymous.
Akama and nishkama, same. Nish and ar.
Yeah.
Or naish karma.
Yeah.
Karma.
Yeah.
But same. So, okay. That's one, because one now becomes used to following shastra and avoidance of sin. Right? Because sin means, of course, not done in connection to the Lord. But in this case, in generic, just means not following the Vedic regulations. So you're used to following the Vedic regulations of the Shastra, and you've given up not following them. That's why this whole thing of coming up with unique ways of defining why you don't have to follow Shastra isn't really a beneficial practice. Because if you can give up one, why can't you give up all of them? You know, but we think we'll be just selective. We'll only do, like we mentioned before. The parents, they go to the temple once a week on Sunday. And then they're complaining to their friends that their children are just not, Krishna conscious. They don't want to come to the temple. They'll only go on festivals. Right?
Mm.
And so then they're all lamenting of how this is not nice. Right? But the point is the parent is looking at it just going when they it fits into their schedule. So the child is doing exactly the same thing. And he's just when it fits into their schedule.
Yes.
You understand? And so that it's selective. That's why one has to be very, very careful about in being selective that one considers, no, it will stop there. Because this is the proper balance. But Shastra, it gives that balance. So one has to be quite careful.
Yes.
Yes.
So although we practice bhakti yoga, we want to keep our options open.
Yes, yes. So even we deal in the areas of options, if we do the work without desire for the result for ourselves, then we'll purify ourselves of those desires. But if we want to maintain them, then they will be maintained. Right? And Krishna's not going to get rid of desires you want to keep. But he'll get rid of desires you don't want to keep. But at the same time, as he'll create the attraction, if one is, you know, has that interest, create that attraction to him, that these desires start to not seem very important. Is that? Yes.
If we come from a background where we're not following Shastra at all,
right?
And then, you know, we're trying to start following the regulations, but we can't, like, immediately follow everything. I mean, what is your position? Then maybe you respect the regulations and you...
Yes, then you that's why it's called practice. Okay. Then you make the endeavor to, how you understand it, apply it. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's why it's sadhana bhakti, we're practicing. Because here it's just practicing following Shastra, the recommendations. But then there's following the recommendations, but without attachment. Then there's following the recommendations without attachment, actually wanting to please Krishna. Right? So there's these stages we're trying to get through. So wherever one can start, that's where we begin. Right? So to follow Shastra means we have to accept authority. Right? Does that make sense? So there has to be that understanding that there is some advantage to authority. Right? Means someone else has experience that we don't have. Better to listen to them than to go through it ourselves. Is that make sense? Yeah. Okay. One who is like this is situated in his prescribed duty, free from sinful activities and cleansed of material contamination. In this very life obtains transcendental knowledge or, by fortune, devotional service unto me. Right. Okay, these are Bhagavatam 10 and 11. Okay. So he's pointing at karma. So like this means he's situated, performing prescribed duties, free from sinful activities, cleansed of material contamination, means one's trying to do it without the desire for the results. Right? Mm-hmm. Then he'll attain transcendental knowledge, or if he's in contact with the pure devotees, then he'll attain bhakti. Mm-hmm. But in any case, performance of duties, avoiding sinful activities, and doing the duties without a desire for results, that will get you liberated. Now, if you do that in connection with devotional service, you'll get bhakti.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So, that's the whole point. Is bhakti already includes liberation. Mm-hmm. And the facilities that the demigods give are sanctioned by the Lord, or given by the Lord, so that means bhakti, worshipping the Lord, already includes those also. Right? Yes.
We practice pure devotional service and then we engage in different activities. But then before we notice it, the mind on the back already calculated what benefit will I get from all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And from all and then particular ones. Like mm-hmm. we engage in studying the Shastra, then it's...
You get this.
And then if I serve this particular devotee, then it's... I want to serve the person, but then in the mind, And
okay.
There is a list of benefits I'm going to get.
Okay.
So is that normal?
Pretty standard. You don't have to worry. You're not. I mean, it depends upon whether you want to. The conclusion is that, you know, everybody else does like that, so you're okay, or you want, or you wanted the conclusion to be, no, you're unique.
No, it just happens like this.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what Krishna is talking about. So that's why it's practice, because one's doing it as nishkam, but then one finds that the mind is holding on to something. So then we notice those parts and try to correct that, because in the beginning, you do something, you don't notice all the details. Right? You think, yeah, you know, it's just like you see somebody cooking something. And you watch, and it looks simple enough, easy, straightforward, but then when you go to cook it yourself, there's all kinds of details. Well, how hot was the ghee? How long did they cook it? What was the color of this? What was all, you know, then all these things come up. And so after many, many times, then you start to notice. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just that's what Krishna's talking about. So one who is situated is free from sin and cleansed of material contamination means that there's at least the intent. Because in all these, if the intent is there to have this, then one gets these benefits. Right? The more one is situated, the better the benefits. But one's still progressing. That's the nice thing about it. On the material platform, until you get it right, you don't get the benefit. But on the spiritual platform, as long as the intent is right, you start already getting the benefit. Is that okay? But that's what the mind does. It's always, you know, it's like, what do you call it? Like squirrels, you know. Yeah. That's all that's done since time immemorial. So that's his practice. But bhakti is so powerful that a practice one's been doing for unlimited time, one can correct that in just one lifetime. That's why bhakti is so special. Because other processes can't do that. You're talking about hundreds of thousands of lifetimes to correct unlimited lifetimes of. And the problem is you're only correcting it with, you know, another form of what you did wrong. Yeah. Karma yoga is a gateway to either jnana or bhakti, right? So karma yoga means it's connected to in this way. Then you can either take up bhakti yoga or jnana yoga, because you'll get knowledge and detachment. So knowledge and detachment are required for jnana yoga, because you're trying to get liberated. And they're also in bhakti yoga, then knowledge about Krishna, detachment from the material endeavor.
Yes.
But it's not the cause of bhakti. That's why it says it's a gateway. But that's a gateway if it's in line with the others. Otherwise, it's just a gateway to jnana.
Is it a cause of jnana?
Basically, Prabhupada mentions if you practice karma yoga, you will come to jnana yoga. Like that. Because knowledge and detachment come. If you function on the platform of knowledge and detachment, that's jnana yoga. Mm-hmm. Right? If you're functioning on the platform of desire, that'll be karma yoga. Right? So it's natural. But now karma yoga turning into bhakti, that's only by the grace of the Lord and the devotees. Srila Sridhar Swami comments. In these verses, anashi kama means not desiring the fruits of action, and anyat means forbidden actions. One may go to the hellish planets in two ways. One is to neglect one's prescribed duties, and the other way is to perform actions that are performed, forbidden. Right? In other words, what you should do, you're not doing. And what you're not supposed to do, you're doing. So either one will take you to hell.
Yeah. Probably both are being practiced.
No, that's it. Yes.
The Royal Road.
The Royal Road. Because he performs his prescribed duties and also shuns forbidden action, the devotee does not go to the hellish planets. And because he does not desire the fruits of action, he does not go to Swargaloka either. Right? So Jiva Goswami, we see Jiva Goswami's bringing out elucidation on Sridhar Swami's comments here. Right. So, that is the meaning. The phrase, asmin loke, means in this body. Look, yes, then just talk Taittiriya Upanishad. Means in this body, anagaha means he who shuns all forbidden actions, and suci means free from the contamination of material passions. Right? So you're able to perform your duties because they should be done. There might be that element of still desiring some results, but it's still situated in goodness. Right? Passion's been given up, that one's intent is to perform the prescribed duty for the fruitive result. The word yadrischaya, by good fortune, by the will of the Lord, shows that devotional service is more rare and difficult to attain than the realization of impersonal Brahman. So for us, Brahman realization, that's pretty standard stuff. It's not special. Because you understand the position and connect things to the Lord, you're dealing with Brahman. So it's not rocket science, right? A neophyte can appreciate the Brahman platform. So it's not, you know, for the impersonalist, you have to basically be on the Uttam platform. But for the devotees, the neophyte can appreciate Brahman. Right? So. Yes.
About the devotee get bhakti by the mercy or grace of Krishna or the devotees, this is up to the pure desire of the devotee or about to get his bhakti?
That means he has to be open to it.
I was listening about the Muchi Kondap and Krishna meet him, and so after talking with Krishna, he just go to even to the Badrikashram, some place to meditate, and then in the next life, it's like, you know, immediately getting like devotional service or.
Means that they're taking up the process of bhakti. Is that what he says? That's what you're trying to get to. Then bhakti may take some time. In other words, if the acharyas make an offer that you can go back to Godhead in this life, take it. Because we see so many examples of others that it takes a few lifetimes. You know, like that. You know, Mushukunda, the next lifetime, you know, how you say, Bharat Maharaj, you know, three lifetimes. You know, so it's you know, if you're given the option of one, take it. You know, we take it for, oh, it's you know, it, that's just standard. No, this is not standard. This is special.
So it's up to us, no?
It's up to the Lord, but we have to be willing. You know what I'm saying? Because if we say it's up to us, then it's we're the one, we're the cause of bhakti. Right?
Krishna always wants, no?
Yes, but so therefore we have to be agreeable.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? It's like the child, if they're throwing a tantrum, it's hard to pick them up. So if the child is not doing that, you can pick them up. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point. It's not that the child, you know, gets, you know, by his own potency gets picked up. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. By the association of the devotees and by attaining their mercy, the sincere souls attain good fortune. So it's the association attaining their mercy. But you need to be sincere. Sincere means that's you have to want. Whether you're able to, how you say, stably practice that, whether you can practice bhakti at the standard you would like to, that's another point. That's not the point. The point is about the sincerity. Some will say, oh, well, if you're not doing this level of bhakti, you're not sincere. But these are just easy phrases that fall out of people's mouths. Sincerity is one thing. It's not dependent upon the situation. You know what I'm saying?
Because
we like to connect it because, you know, we're the ones that, you know, we're the, you know, it's our culture that's the archetypes of things like the Inquisition and other things like this. We like these absolutisms that you know, any wrong move ends in death. You know, this is how we like to think that, you know, pious is. But most of the rest of the world doesn't work on that so much. Like that, you know, it's a.
We try to convince them, though.
Yeah, of course. We've done our best, right? You know, that. You know, what do we do? They wanted freedom, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
Because sometimes the devotees say that I want to be sincere devotee. I try my best, but still it's like.
Yeah, so they just have to continue like that. In other words, you have to continue that move.
Right? It's true that they are trying, but not moving.
That's there, but you just have to continue with that mood. That's the point. That's why the acharyas in their prayers say that even though I'm unqualified, still I want it. Because that's just the natural position. It's just, there's no other. Right? Yes? No? So that's the first step. Now you try to naturally, since you want it, you try to bring your desire and your endeavors so that they match. It's a better offering. Right?
It's not going like together, the strong desire with the endeavor?
Okay. The 3-year-old comes in from the backyard with a handful of, you know, kind of half bent and broken with leaves falling off, you know, daisies from out in the backyard, and gives to his mom. Right? So what's the speciality here? The offering? The mom is just dying to have a few dandelion flowers, you know. She you know, in fact, you know, they make her sneeze, so she just really wanted. Yes. So that's the sincerity. You understand? Now the point is now you combine that with a recommended endeavor, then it becomes very nice. Because all it is a further manifestation of the sincerity. Does that make sense?
So, let's say my position for these devotees they are trying, but I cannot see any progress.
But the point is to keep doing it. You haven't. Is there an alternative? Is there an alternative? Go out and get a better job. Go back to school. You know, go. You know, learn dancing. You know, I mean, what's the alternative?
Go-kart.
Okay, go-karting. Is that going to... is it going to change it? So the point is unless you keep at it, it doesn't happen. Right? Does that make sense? Like, the person won the gold in the 100 meter, right? And let's say they're 19 years old. Okay? So, just when they turn 19, they decided, I'm going to run, I'm going to get the gold, and then, you know, they got in, and they were just so good, you know, that they just immediately took them to the Olympics. They didn't have to train for the 4 years or anything like that, right? Is that how it worked? Or they liked running since they were like 3 years old. Right? So that's the whole point, is that it takes time. This idea is if it doesn't happen yesterday, then there's something wrong with it. No, it's just a matter of you keep practicing. How many things that people actually want to do, they get? And when they do get them, how quickly? You know what I'm saying? The guy starts up, you know, in the company, and he finally gets that position in the company he wanted. Right? But he's 70. Yes. It takes time. Okay.
Huh? Yeah. Nice time in preparation.
He's the lucky one.
Yes.
I think Mahaprabhu himself and then Shishastaka Mama Janmani Janmanishvara Bhavata Bhakti.
The point is we're willing to take many births, but the point is since the recommendation is there not to, then we should make that endeavor.
Yeah.
In other words, we're saying, oh, I'm so fallen, it's going to take me so many births, this and that. You know, is it a matter of I've fallen and I'm not comfortable with that, or I've fallen and I'm okay with that?
Mm.
You know? That's the... So. In verse 11, Sukadeva Goswami explained that the demigod worshippers can attain bhakti by the mercy of the pure devotees. Verse 12 states that the jnanis also can become devotees. Quote, transcendental knowledge about Lord Hari suspends the whirlpools of the material modes. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachment. Right, so it's free from material attachment. It's satisfying to the self. Right, so the real thing freed from attachment is bhakti. It's about the Lord. Because as we mentioned, liberation is just a bigger desire. Right? You know, it's just like you go into the store and there's something in the store you really want, but you just don't have the facilities to get it. So you give up that desire because it's just unattainable. So what you decide is, I want the whole store. I want to own the store. Right?
All stores.
Yeah. All stores, yeah. You know, and then I can, you know, that will make me happy. That's so it's just bigger material desire. So it's self-satisfying. This not transcendental knowledge about Hari, because other transcendental knowledge isn't really satisfying to the self. Mm. It's on the edge. That's why it appears to give something, but it doesn't really. Being transcendental, it is approved by authorities. Who could fail to be attracted? Verse 12. Srila Sridhar Swami comments that this verse means devotional service is the true path of liberation. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on verse 12 as follows. It is improper to take shelter of one deity at the end of life after taking shelter of someone else for one's whole life. How can it be proper to make the person who has always worshipped some devata develop devotion to the Lord at the end? Right? Because in other words, if someone's been giving you benefit all along and then at the end you switch to someone else, that's considered not good etiquette. So then the point comes up is, he's worshipped this demigod his whole life. How can you recommend he give that up and now worship Hari?
Yeah.
Right? Such worshippers of devatas are actually very low, because even the worshippers of Brahman take to the worship of the Lord. The progression is shown in this verse. When there arises jnana, which destroys the multitude of whirlpools of the gunas, which brings satisfaction to the self, by which there is detachment from material enjoyment, and which is the path proved for emerging, then bhakti yoga arises. One should not worry that one cannot attain association of devotees, since that mercy is spontaneous. As explained previously, by the mercy of the Lord, Sanaka and others attain bhakti. By the mercy of the devotees, persons such as Sukadeva attain bhakti through kirtan and other processes. Who absorbed in the happiness of bhakti would not have attachment for topics of the Lord? This means that the person without attachment for the topics of the Lord is not happy at all. Here the superiority of pure bhakti to karma, jnana, and yoga, and worship of devatas is shown. And whatever they aim to achieve in those processes is accomplished by bhakti alone. And for all those persons practicing various methods, the highest result, prema, is finally attained by only bhakti. Thus, pure bhakti, which disregards karma and jnana, without any of those desires, whose principal activities are hearing, glorifying, and remembering the Lord, is the method of producing prema. This is the opinion of Sukadeva. Among those methods, chanting the name of the Lord is the supreme method. Thus, five items, karma, jnana, yoga, bhakti, and prema, have been delineated. This is the meaning of the section in summary.
Yes.
Question 29, implied by Sukadeva Goswami, between verses 1 and 2 of this chapter, can be summed up as follows. Should a person who has many material desires remain on the path of spiritual attainment? Should he? Right, that was the point Mataji was making, is that, you know, I have these desires, should I remain in this process? Right? Should he still worship and fix his mind only on Krishna? And for achieving material benefits, may he worship demigods? Below is the philosophical summary of Sukadeva Goswami's reply. Regardless of the quality of one's desires, one should hear and chant about Krishna. A thoughtful person should accept the shelter of a spiritual master and, taking to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, fully engage himself in devotional service, hearing and chanting about Krishna's holy names and pastimes. Although different demigods can be worshipped to fulfill one's material desires, demigod worship is not recommended for one who is intelligent. Even when faced with other desires, one with broad intelligence should worship Krishna with great strength and determination in bhakti yoga, for bhakti is both the means and the perfected end. Without worship of the Lord, other worship is illusion. By the association of a pure devotee, even the worshippers of demigods can attain unflinching and spontaneous attraction to the Lord. Thus, everyone, including the worshippers of demigods, will be attracted to the transcendental knowledge in relation to the Lord, wherein bliss is experienced even in the stage of sadhana, if that sadhana is properly undertaken under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. Verses 1 through 12 and purports. Verses 13 to 25. Okay. Yes.
Is demigod worship exclusive to India?
You count Ra as a demigod?
I'm sorry. Oh, count Ra, yeah. But the Buddhists, they also, there's a lot of different styles of Buddhism that I think about. In Thailand, they worship deities.
Yeah, no, it's pretty standard.
In worshiping powerful human beings, that's sort of the reflection of gross. Yeah.
That's just to get a little simpler than that. Uh-huh. Right? So it's just the idea is that one is going to worship, that it's going to happen. So since that's there, why not get the proper benefit from that by worshiping the Lord? One wants to be happy, get that in connection with the Lord. One has to have an identity, have that in connection with the Lord. You know, one will make endeavors, do that in connection with the Lord. But otherwise, because the soul has its nature, and so people only act on this nature of the soul. They just misapply it. You know, it's just like money has, you know, can buy things, but what you buy indicates how, you know, knowledgeable you are or trained you are in the use of money. Does that make sense? It's just like, just take, you know.
Money being Lakshmi?
No, money being those funny flat pieces of paper with faces on it.
That's the version
of money. No, but that. Don't get into the detail of the example. Get into what the example is for.
Okay.
What I'm saying is, like, you have these celebrities, right? They make $10-20 million in a movie.
Got it.
Right. Now, you check, and then some of them are worth $150 million, some are worth $500 million. Others aren't worth anything. They have nothing. If another movie doesn't come along, they're finished. What's the difference? One has some understanding how to deal with money. They use it properly. The other doesn't. But spending money, they will. Just one spends it on investments, the other spends it on parties. Does that make sense? So that's what we're saying, is that the living entity is going to worship. Now, by training, you can understand to apply it and get better benefit. Does that make sense? So you should get proper benefit from these things, because people are going to do it anyway. It's just the way it works. There's no question they're not going to do it.
So it's a question of application.
It's a question of application. So that there is that principle that there, you can take that and continue it forward. You can cultivate it and develop it. The difficulty comes is when there's too strong of an identity or a enamorment by it, then you can't get them past that. You can't get them to the principle because they're so distracted by the detail. But those that you can make aware of the principle, then you can take them from whatever position they're in up to the transcendental position. Is that?
Could you give an example of that? To take someone from a mundane perspective into the transcendental?
The person, he has faith in baby Jesus. Mm. Okay, so he has faith in something, that there's something higher.
Right.
That there's some benefit to be gotten, that there's such a thing as transcendental, though they don't really know what transcendental means.
Right.
So the point is that, but now if that can be the body's temporary, these things, why go for something of lesser? Why wouldn't we go for something higher?
Would explain to that person?
Yeah.
What?
I just explained what I would explain.
You wouldn't give them another object of worship?
First, you have to work with what you have.
Yeah.
You know? Does that make sense? Uh-huh. You know, it's just like you know, whatever it is, there's something that connects to the Lord. So you use that, and from there you take it up. Like Prabhupada, there was I never remember his name. He was a Formula One racer, English, in the 60s. So Prabhupada met him, and he was introduced to him. And the first thing he did was talk about some English car he had, some classic English car. I'm not sure from what age, 30s or 40s. And, you know, they got off on a lively discussion about this car, because it's like, it was a real, like, you know, classic British car.
Mm.
And then from there, then Prabhupada went into, you know, when he's racing, you know. So when he's racing, you know, then in those dangerous moments in the racing, does he become afraid? Right? And then from being afraid, what does he do? You know, how does he deal with that fear? And then from there, then they got in discussing about, you know, the taking shelter of the Lord. You know, so that it wasn't a you know 2 minute conversation on the car. It was a 20 minute on the car.
Right.
But then you find that spot, and then you work in. So that's the point. You start from whatever they're into.
Right. Yeah, that's good.
You know what I'm saying? Because everything that you're working with, its basis of interest is a superior quality. Right. In other words, fear is there, but the superior quality is shelter.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes in his general preaching, Prabhupada said, you don't have to change anything, just add Krishna.
Yeah, you don't. But you'll naturally, having added Krishna, then you'll start to change. But you don't have to change it to add Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, we either get is devotees, you have to change, otherwise you can't add Krishna. Or having added Krishna, I don't have to change anything. I can stay exactly the way I am. But the point is why would you do that? You know, an enlightened man naturally changes.
To add Krishna, you'd almost have to be around people that know a little bit about Krishna.
Yes, that's the point of association. That's why devotees go out and preach. That's why they're out. That's why you know they're devotees.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know. I mean, of course, you still know they're devotees because they're wearing the baggy T-shirt and look like a slob. So you could, but who wants to go up to that person and ask him a question? Right? But if you see them in their robes and that, the tendency is if you really were inquisitive, you go up and ask.
It's like George Harrison at the Shell Center.
Yeah, that's the whole point. So that's Prabhupada's point. If one person takes advantage of it, it was worth it. So walking over, all over the whole world in bed sheets, and if one person, you know, came forward, it's worth it.
You see these hoodies, but what's the point of life? Ask me on the back. Sometimes you think, I'm not sure.
If you want to ask that.
Yeah, that's the kind.
Yeah, but why would he ask a guy in a hoodie?
Yeah, that's my point.
Does he look cool? You know, that means he says like that. So, because unless he looked cool in a hoodie, you're not going to ask him. You know. Right? Yeah. So it's not the hoodie.
No.
It's the guy wearing the hoodie. Right? Yeah.
How's this for a T-shirt? Get your chip together.
Yeah, that works. Yeah.
Or there's another one. On the front it says, had enough. And on the back you have some information, website or something.
Yeah, I mean, these are, they work as in your face, but it depends who's wearing them. You know, but the situation, it only works on certain people. But, you know, it's fun. It's fun, but... Yes?
Maharaj, I didn't understand the point that if somebody is worshipping one demigod, so at the end of the night they should not drop it and they...
That's what the materialist is saying. He's saying it's uncultured. That I mean, in other words, a doubt is there. It is improper to take shelter of one deity at the end of life after taking shelter of someone else for one's whole life. Right? So, because you don't change these kind of things, it's just the etiquette. But here, it's not the regular thing because you're changing to the source of the demigods. You're not changing to another demigod. Right? Because in the Vedic line, there's always this thing of staying in your line. Don't change your lines. It's not proper. But when you're changing to transcendence, that's the origin of all these lines, so it's not a problem. Does that make sense? Yeah, so even it means that the Vedic thing doesn't allow you to switch from one thing to another.
Vaishnava once told me, the Kali worshippers, they cut a deal with Kali to get material things from their tantra, whatever they go over there. But none of them, at the time of death, call out for Kali because the arrangement is she comes to cut you up or something. There's a trade-off. So they're not going Kali, Kali, they're going Krishna, Krishna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they can switch up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, in the Maharshi worship is inevitable.
In the?
Like, Maharshi worship is inevitable, so does that worship also include some sense of being submissive and following?
In the ideal sense, but at the same time it depends upon who you're... You know, I mean, if you're worshipping Sid Vicious, then I wouldn't recommend it. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. Sorry. You know. So, but point is, but that's natural. You know. So that's why it should be taken to someone who one's not going to be disappointed, right? So that'll be Krishna. Verses 13 to 25. Shaunaka Rishi's eagerness to hear Krishna Katha. Shaunaka Rishi and the other sages of Naimisharanya find themselves greatly inspired by Suta Goswami's rendition of the learned poetic teachings of Sukadev Goswami to Maharaj Parikit. The sages voice their eagerness to learn from Suta Goswami about other questions King Parikit put before his spiritual master and how they were answered. The sages dismiss those who never hear and chant such topics. Okay, from the verses. Now the narrative of Srimad Bhagavatam shifts back to the forest of Naimisharanya, Vaishanika Rishi praises Sukadeva Goswami as a highly learned sage who is able to describe things in a poetic manner. Shanika then asked Sutta what more Maharaj Parikshit inquired about after sage Sukadeva answered his first two questions. Right? The questions were so good, the answers are so good, they just want to know if there's more. Mm. Right? It's just the natural position. Shanika expresses his personal eagerness to hear the Krishna Katha discussed between these two great devotees. Parikshit Maharaj, who was devoted to Krishna from his childhood, and Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyas, who is full of knowledge. The greatest philosophers are those who get pleasure from glorifying Krishna in the company of great devotees. 13-16. In his purport to verse 14, Srila Prabhupada highlights the importance of discussing transcendental literatures in the assembly of devotees. The difficulty is that such literatures, when discussed by professional men, appear to be mundane literature like histories or epics because there are so many historical facts and figures. It is said here, therefore, that such literature should be discussed in the assembly of devotees. Unless they are discussed by devotees, such literatures cannot be relished by the higher class of men. So the conclusion is that the Lord is not impersonal in the ultimate issue. Right? It means the impersonal aspect is there, but in the ultimate issue, he's the person, he's the source or basis of this Brahma. He is the Supreme Person. He has his different activities. He is the leader of all living entities. And he descends at his will and by his personal energy to reclaim the fallen souls. Thus, he plays exactly like the social, political, or religious leaders. But such roles ultimately culminate in the discussion of topics of the Lord. All such preliminary topics are also transcendental. Right? The preliminary, because there's an environment in which he appears and performs a pastime. So one may take those as prominent, but they're actually preliminary. They're just to set the scene so that then you'll discuss about the Lord. Right? Because the importance is the discussion between Krishna and Arjuna. Right, that it's on a battlefield, and then the mood of Arjuna, the mood of Duryodhana, the comparison of those two. These are just setting kind of the flavor, the mood. Okay. But the real importance is the discussion itself. Right? So whatever the Lord does, whether he comes as a boar or whether he comes as a horse, it doesn't matter. He's doing all these things. These are to create that wonderful exchange between the devotees. That is the way of spiritualizing the civic activities of human society. Men have inclinations for studying history and many other mundane literatures, stories, fiction, dramas, magazines, newspapers, etc. So let them be dovetailed with the transcendental service of the Lord, and all of them will turn to the topics relished by all devotees. The propaganda that the Lord is impersonal, that he has no activity, and that he is a dumb stone without any name and form, has encouraged people to become godless, faithless demons, and the more they deviate from transcendental activities of the Lord, the more they become accustomed to mundane activities that only clear their path to hell instead of return them home back to Godhead. Yeah. So these things is that if he's impersonal, then why do you have to worry? Right? If he's a person, you worry. Right? Like just even in the Old Testament, then God describes himself as jealous. Right? Because as if the guy's a friendly, congenial guy, you don't really worry too much if you do something wrong. But if he's jealous, you're very careful. But if he's impersonal, he's not a person at all, and there's no one going to be, you know, looking at what you're doing, then who cares? Right? Yes.
I think what turns a lot of people off to devotional theism is accountability.
Accountability by who?
The supreme authority.
No.
They're accountable.
Accountable. No, that's... It's not devotional service, it's just that authority in general. There's authority issue. People want to be the authority themselves. As we mentioned, it goes back. The reason that Socrates was killed is because people didn't want to accept that there's an absolute authority. That's the point. He was saying there's an absolute authority. We have to adjust to that authority. They say, no, we as the people, we make the authority. And so, you know, somebody's got to go here. And since all these other guys are small-timers, then, you know, he's got to go. So it's a general thing. It's not just devotional service. It's anything with authority. That means when you talk about conspiracy theories, what is it all about? It's always about authority. That's who's making the conspiracy. Right? If it's about, you know, something else on a small time, so guys in the back, you know, in the garage, then it's called a racket. You know? So you're not worried about authority, you're just worried about getting cheated. But these things are because it's authority. So there's always this issue of authority. Does that make sense? So the whole point is, but without authority, how do you know anything? How do you learn anything? How do you understand anything? If everybody had to work everything out themselves, then there would be this whole development you see in society couldn't be there. Everybody would have to be out there, you know, walking around and, you know, if they're fortunate, you know, drop a rock and notice that there's sparks, you know. Or even better, you drop a rock and it starts a fire, you know, and instead of running off, you know, you figure out, you know, what to do with it, you know. So that's the difficulty thing. But that's why you start with the self. You don't start with the authority, you start with the self. Because most people are interested in the self. They just don't know who the self is. But you start there. You know, that in that purport to 2234. Right? That was that big purport of Prabhupada's when he gave it logical? That whole logical? I think it was 2234. That there gives the whole process how you take someone through. What was in the previous book? It would be the second chapter. Yeah, I remember it was 34. So that there gives how the process of how you do, because showing how you're not the body, how you're not in control of the material energy, and whatever you do with the material energy, the benefits you get doesn't actually satisfy you. Right. So then there must be some alternative. Why wouldn't it? Because we're eternal. We're the spirit. So then you take it up from there. Then you come to the supreme authority.
But people want to just be able to do anything and everything and think it's okay.
Yes, and they will do, and they will suffer. The point is you can do it. How is it working out for you? How is it working out for society? What about, you know, what was it, Texas, was it, Chainsaw Massacre? That guy just did what he wanted, you know? What about, what was it, Columbine, the high school? He just did what he wanted. That's the problem, is that if people just do what they want, there won't be anything left. So you have to have structure, you have to have restriction. And that means there must be authority to carry it out. So there's no question of everybody just doing whatever they want. It's this ideal that comes up now and again at different times, like that. I mean, the hippies are one of the latter ones. Nowadays people have it, but it goes back to Bohemian, you know, kind of like that. Yeah, you know, that goes back hundreds of years. You know, before that you always had. You always check. There's always the philosophy of just doing whatever you feel like and being free from the rules. It's always there. Like even in Buddhism, sahajayan, that's what it is. We don't need to study and we don't need to follow rules. We just do what we like. That's called sahajya. Like that. So it's standard. So it's not special. They'll feel that I'm special and unique, but they're just pretty ordinary. Every animal does whatever it likes. That's the animal world. Humans are the only ones that can control and do what they're supposed to do, not what they like. Like that. So that's the uniqueness of humans. So if you just want to do what you like, then they're just animal. So what's the difference between them and, you know, the cat? You know, the cat just does what it likes. Okay. Footnote 5. Even 50 years ago, the social structure of all Indians was so arranged that they would not read any literature that was not connected with the activities of the Lord. They would not play any drama not connected with the Lord. They would not organize a fair or ceremony not connected with the Lord. Nor would they visit a place that was not holy and sanctified by the pastimes of the Lord. Therefore, even the common man in the village would talk about Ramayana and Mahabharata, Gita and Bhagavatam, even from his very childhood. But by the influence of the age of Kali, they have been dragged to the civilization of dogs and hogs. You know, read modern. Laboring for bread without any sense of transcendental knowledge. Footnote to 2314 put for purport. Oh, I see. And then you brought it here, and then that didn't come out. Okay. You could just extend it. Original footnote in this.
Footnote of the footnote.
Shonaka Rishi continues, both by rising and setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes the time by discussing topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. 17. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary, this is not an activity which can be delayed. The sun rises and sets. It steals away men's life, except the life where there arises the opportunity for hearing topics of Krishna. But it means you can't just put it off, because the sun did come up and the sun goes down. Or the sun steals away life, except the life where even just a moment is spent in the topics of the Lord. By this alone, life becomes successful. What then to speak of all the branches bearing fruit? If one spent one's whole life absorbed in Krishna's topic, how wonderful it would be. Then a point comes up. If that is so, and life is not taken away by hearing about Krishna, from the moment of hearing about Krishna, a person should not die. End quote. That is true. It is said that the wealth of those of good character is imperishable wealth, since others spend their wealth in unlimited pleasures. The Smriti says, in giving to the non-brahmana, the amount remains the same. In giving to a brahmana in name only, the amount doubles. In giving to a brahmana who knows the Vedas thoroughly, the amount multiplies to 100,000. Manusmriti 785. The devotee blessed with long life by Krishna then becomes the associate of the Lord. Certainly his life is indestructible. It doesn't mean you don't change bodies, but you're continuing with the same consciousness. Right? Because what happens is changing, you don't know who you were. You know, there's no continuity of means. Of course, the materialistic endeavor or the materialistic desire remains. But the point is it changes. So for the devotee, it's not the life remains. Thus the devotee of Krishna does not have his life stolen away. The devotee's old age, death, and sickness appear by the will of the Lord, for increasing his longing for the Lord, for letting the opinions of others not be destroyed. Footnote 6. Gyanis think that karmic reactions of this life can be destroyed only by experiencing them. And for protecting the confidential nature of the devotee. So the Lord arranges it this way, then those who are, you know, worried about how karma functions and all that will be satisfied that it's going on in this way. Otherwise, it'll seemingly be inconsistent to them, because impersonalists don't know about the personality of Godhead. So they don't know about His will. So then, if karma is acting differently, it wouldn't make sense to them. And at the same time, is then the devotees are hidden for those who don't want to know about them. Right.
So,
they are not caused by time or karma. This has been explained in the chapter concerning Bhishma's disappearance. Right? So this Krishna karma, the devotee is not functioning on that. It looks similar just because that's how it works, so that others will be comfortable. Right? Like devotee, Krishna has appearance and disappearance pastimes, and people are comfortable. Right? Like that. So then it works out. So that's why Krishna does it this way. But it's not controlled by time and not controlled by karma. It's controlled by Krishna. Shaunaka Rishi continues. Do the trees not live, and do the bellows of the blacksmith not breathe? All around us do the beasts not eat and discharge semen? Footnote 7. The personified Vedas state as Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.17. Only if they become your faithful followers are those who breathe actually alive. Otherwise, the breathing is like that of the bellows. Because the prayers of the personified Vedas are the, you could say, the original Purana. Right? And everything's expanded from this. Right? Does that make sense? Because the personified Vedas, the discussions of the residents of Brahmaloka, because all they do is discuss Shastra, live Shastra, everything is perfect. So those discussions are what is expanded into all the Vedic literatures, right, into the Puranas, because then you're giving stories about those points. Like here's a point made, then there'll be a story showing this, illustrating it. Srila Prabhupada comments, the materialistic man of the modern age will argue that life, or part of it, is never meant for discussion of theosophical or theological arguments. Life is meant for the maximum duration of existence, for eating, drinking, sexual intercourse, making merry, and enjoying life. The modern man wants to live forever by the advancement of material science. And there are many foolish theories for prolonging life to the maximum duration. But the Srimad Bhagavatam affirms that life is not meant for so-called economic development or advancement of materialistic science for the hedonistic philosophy of eating, mating, drinking, and merrymaking. Life is solely meant for tapasya, for purifying existence, so that one may enter into eternal life just after the end of the human form of life. The materialist wants to prolong life as much as possible because they have no information of the next life. They want to get the maximum comforts in this present life because they think conclusively that there is no life after death. This ignorance about the eternity of the living being and the change of covering in the material world has played havoc in the structure of modern human society. Because right? They don't know this, then the whole society goes on in a very bad way. Consequently, there are many problems multiplied by various plans of modernized man. The plans for solving the problems of society have only aggravated the troubles. Even if it is possible to prolong life more than 100 years, advancement of human civilization does not necessarily follow. The Bhagavatam says that certain trees live for hundreds and thousands of years. Swami Shankaracharya lived only 32 years, and Lord Chaitanya lived 48 years. Does it mean that the prolonged lives of the above-mentioned trees are more important than Shankara or Chaitanya? Prolonged life without spiritual value is not very important. Yes. So it'll be argued, but the point is it's not getting any better. Can't say that people are happy like that. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer from evils. Right? So here's the point before of praising. So men who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, they praise those men who never listen to the transcendental. So then, even though one praises them, it's not ideal to become like them. I mean, unless you particularly like dogs, hogs, camels, or asses. Okay. Srila Prabhupada explains, the general mass of people, unless they are trained systematically for a higher standard of life and spiritual values, are no better than animals. And in this verse, they have practically been put on the levels of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Modern university education practically prepares one to acquire a doggish mentality with which to accept the service of a greater master. After finishing a so-called education, The so-called educated persons move like dogs from door to door with applications for some service, and mostly they are driven away, informed of no vacancy. As dogs are negligible animals and serve the master faithfully for bits of bread, a man serves a master faithfully without sufficient rewards. Right, so it hasn't, it's not, it, the same applies now, even though there's unions, even though there's everything, it's still the same. The point is it's the proportion. You work 12 hours a day, you get paid for 12 hours a day. You make it that you can only be, work 8 hours a day, you only get paid for 8 hours. It's not you're getting paid for 12. Right? You know, it's just the way it works. It's, nothing changes. Persons who have no discrimination in the matter of foodstuff and who eat all sorts of rubbish are compared to hogs. Right? Hogs are very much so. The first one is that that's modern education, is to prepare dogs.
Yeah.
Like that. Right?
And they're very successful.
Yeah, no, it is. And people buy into it. They think you have to be a good dog.
Yeah, they love it.
Right? Person that, okay, who eat, hogs are very much attached to eating stools. So stool is a kind of foodstuff for a particular type of animal. And even stones are edibles for a particular type of animal or bird. But the human being is not meant for eating everything and anything. He is meant to eat grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, sugar, etc. Animal food is not meant for the human being. Therefore, a human being is meant to eat a particular type of food. It means neither the food that the animal eats nor the animal itself. Right? So we refer to, you know, animal food. Yes. Either one.
We need to point that
out. So I mean, stay away from the dog biscuits. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Therefore, a human being is meant to eat a particular type of food. He should not imitate the animals to derive so-called vitamin values. Therefore, a person imitate the animals, right? Eat grass because they get vitamin values out of it. Right? Therefore, a person who has no discrimination in regard to eating is compared to a hog. Wow. The camel is a kind of animal that takes pleasure in eating thorns. A person who wants to enjoy family life or the worldly life of so-called enjoyment is compared to the camel. Materialistic life is full of thorns, and so one should live only by the prescribed method of the Vedic regulations, just to make the best use of a bad bargain. Life in the material world is maintained by sucking one's own blood. The central point of attraction for material enjoyment is sex life. To enjoy sex life is to suck one's own blood. And there is not much more to be explained in this connection. The camel also sucks its own blood while chewing thorny twigs. The thorns the camel eats cuts the tongue of the camel, and so blood begins to flow within the camel's mouth. The thorns mixed with fresh blood create a taste for the foolish camel, and so he enjoys the thorn-eating business with false pleasure, because he actually thinks it's the thorns.
Mm. Yeah.
Similarly, the great business magnates, industrialists who work very hard to earn money for different ways and questionable means, eat the thorny results of their actions mixed with their own blood. Therefore, the Bhagavatam has stated these diseased fellows, has situated these diseased fellows along with the camels.
This is fun.
Right, you know, the general guy is the dog, right? You know, the gourmand is the hog.
Right?
You know, then the guys that run the system, they're the camels, right? And that, now we come to the ass. Right?
Finally.
The ass is an animal who is celebrated as the greatest fool, even amongst the animals. The ass works very hard and carries burdens of the maximum weight without making profit for itself. Footnote 8. Human life is meant for earning values. This life is called artadam, or that which delivers value, that which can deliver values. And what is the greatest value of life? It is to return home back to Godhead, as indicated in the Bhagavad Gita 8.15. One's selfishness must be aimed at the point of going back to Godhead. The ass does not know his self-interest, and it works very hard for others only. Person who works very hard for others only, forgetting his personal interest available in the human form of life, is compared to the ass. Footnote to 2.3.19, verbal. Huh?
Same.
Okay, same. Okay. The ass is generally engaged by the washerman, whose social position is not very respectable. And the special qualification of the ass is that it is very much accustomed to being kicked by the opposite sex. When the ass begs for sexual intercourse, he is kicked by the fair sex. Yet he still follows the female for such spiritual sexual pleasure. A henpecked man is compared, therefore, to the ass. The general mass of people work very hard, especially in the age of Kali. In this age, the human being is actually engaged in the work of an ass, carrying heavy burdens and driving tela and rickshaws. The so-called advancement of human civilization has engaged the human being in the work of an ass. Right? Because tailas? Tailas are these, they're like a cart, but men pull them. Yeah. Like that. Because they could go through town, go anywhere, and everything like that. So they're being engaged in the occupation like an ass.
Pretty much.
Like that. The so-called advancement of human civilization has it. Okay. The laborers in great factories and workshops are also engaged in such burdensome work. And after working hard during the day, the poor laborer has to be again kicked by the fair sex, not only for sex enjoyment, but also for so many household affairs. Right? So, you know, he's doing the occupation of an ass, and then when it comes to his family life, that he's getting kicked like an ass. So he gets the full experience, like the full program. Right? Nothing is left out. Right?
Okay.
So Bhagavatam's categorization of the common man without any spiritual enlightenment into the society of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses is not at all an exaggeration. The leaders of such ignorant masses of people may feel very proud of being adored by such a number of dogs and hogs, but that is not very flattering. Right? The Bhagavatam openly declares that although a person may be a great leader of such dogs and hogs disguised as men, if he has no taste for being enlightened in the science of Krishna, such a leader is also an animal and nothing more. He may be designated as a powerful, strong animal or a big animal, but in the estimation of Srimad Bhagavatam, he is never given a place in the category of man on account of his atheistic temperament. Or, in other words, such godless leaders of dogs and hog-like men are bigger animals with the qualities of animals in greater proportion. Footnote 9. No, so you give him credit that he is, you know, he's a bigger animal. Like, you know, in any, you know, pack, there's always a bigger animal, right? In the lecture on Bhagavad Gita 120, Srila Prabhupada explains, it is said that a person without God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, he is no better than these dogs and hogs, that's all. This is our conclusion. We don't give any formal respect. Of course, we have to give because we are in this world. But at heart, we cannot give respect to a person who has not any sense of Krishna consciousness. So the point is in etiquette, when in dealings, we deal very properly according to the position, whatever it is, like that. But at heart, we don't think that, yes, now here's a successful person, I want to be like them. You know, I have something to gain from them.
Yeah.
Okay. But at heart, we cannot give respect to such to a person who has not any sense of Krishna consciousness. We cannot give. Because who is going to give any respect to the dogs and hogs? Svavid yara hoshtra karaihi samstuta purusha pashu. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:3:19. Therefore, Jiva Goswami has commented on this verse. If someone says that, quote, this Mr. Such and Such, this Dr. Such and Such, he is respected by so many people, and you are saying that he is a rascal. What is this? So Jiva Goswami says that, quote, this man who is respected, but he is respected by whom? He is respected by this class of men, dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. So he is a big pashu. End quote. Just like the lion. Lion is respected in the forest by dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, and other animals, because lion is the king of the animals. But does it mean because he is designated the king of animals, it has got any use? Has it got any use for any purpose? Similarly, these political leaders, they may be lion, but who respects them? Right? Because you're king of the animals in the jungle, but what's the benefit? Is there any progress? Is there any development? No. So that's the point. You know, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary on the same verse, "Their animalistic life is to be condemned. They are glorified profusely by dogs, pigs, camels, and donkeys. He, as one person, accepts the qualities of us four animals, whereas we are all incapable of taking up another animal's qualities." Right? So he's saying, this one person can accept the qualities of all four animals, but those animals themselves can only do their one animal stuff. Right? So who's the worst animal? Right? He, being a human, can take up so many qualities of animals, and we, being animals, cannot take up even one quality of another animal. Overstepping his scripture ordained by Dharma, he accepts our qualities with passion. We, however, are fixed in our qualities by destiny. Right? So they're just doing what they're supposed to do. Well, this man is taking up with great enthusiasm. Yes. He is aware of the hell into which he will be born by following our qualities, whereas we are dull-witted and cannot understand anything of the future. In this way, the animals praise him in four ways. The dog's quality is to become angry without reason. The pig's quality is to eat impure items. The quality of the camel is carrying heavy burdens. The quality of the donkey is to be kicked by his mate. Right. So, you know, they can develop all these. So we praise him for having developed these wonderful qualities.
Amazing. We won't do it.
Yeah? Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur introduces the next five verses, 20 to 24, as follows. After the whole person has been criticized, now the parts of his body are criticized by the person. Okay. I'm done with them in general. Now let's get down to detail.
Specific.
One who has not listened to the messages about the prowess and marvelous acts of the personality of Godhead, and has not sung or chanted loudly the worthy songs about the Lord, is to be considered to possess ear holes like the holes of snakes, and the tongue like the tongue of a frog. Okay, now we get down into detail. Okay, time is right on.
You can look forward to tomorrow.
But it's funny, I hope. Now we've criticized him in general, now we'll get into specifics.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nita Bhakti Vrinda ki jai, Nita Gaur ki
jai. We can do it so elegantly. I don't know, criticize, but you can say
things
so.
Yeah, that's the trick, if you can, because they're detached.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it makes it very easy to do, because then you can choose the words and just say it pleasantly. There's no, you don't have to, you're not trying to express your own emotional feelings or frustration.
Just stating.
So therefore, they can go through it so tastefully.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just so amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just so clear.
I think he was the most famous French, what is it, the rapier or something? The real thin, super thin. It's not like a sword as such, it's only for poking. I think he was the most famous in France. But he had this huge nose, really big nose. So whenever, you know, because you always are in some hotel somewhere, and sitting around, and it's always full of people that are going hither and thither, you know. And so someone always has to comment about his nose. So on one occasion, then you know, the guy made some comment, and then his point was, that's all you can come up with? You know, just, you know, you don't have any brains? And he went on to explain all these ways that if he was, you know, had used his intelligence, he could have come up with so many more amazing comparisons of his nose to, you know, make it sound even more. And then after going on this whole poetic thing, you know, but since you've insulted me, then, you know.
Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh, maybe. But he was truly. So the thing is his nose, and he's
the nose.
It's what he feels. So therefore, he can even come up with even better ones because he's not really attached to. You know,
and he's heard them all.
Yeah. Nobility. Yeah. So they therefore they have character. They have these things. They can deal more. That's the whole point. Is that. When there's always this effort to get rid of authority, then in the process you get rid of that not only bad authority, but you get rid of the good elements of authority. And then everything's lost. Then it's just down to everybody just doing their own thing. And that will turn into insanity. And then what you get is, the reaction is, to control that you have to have a more totalitarian government.
Yeah.
That's just history. I'm not just saying that. That's just history. Right? You know, you get rid of the Tsar, you get Stalin. Right?
Still enjoy it.
Like that. You know, you get rid of Louis, you get Napoleon. I mean, he wasn't a bad guy, but, you know, you get rid of the Kaiser, you get Hitler. You know, you get rid of whoever was in Italy, you get Mussolini. You know, so you get the local things, you get Tito, you get this. That's just the way it works. You know, you get rid of the king, you get Pol Pot. Right? You know, so it's just, you know, it's just, that's how it works. Because if you don't have leadership, things degrade. And then to hold it together, you have to have really strong government. You know, like that. So that's the Vedic thing, is you have this same strength of government, but you have the character to balance that. Therefore, even though it's very, very strong government, everybody is secure and peaceful and protected. So that's why the two are always there. You know, the character, the situations, how you deal.